You're listening to Code Punk with Bill Ahern and Michael Zuhl, a podcast about the intersection between programming, technology, and the digital lifestyle.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Bill. How you been?
I've been really good, actually, despite the fact that the weather... I got a drone for Christmas. This is not related. Well, it's like tech hardware. I got a drone for Christmas. And the weather, since December, we've had maybe a handful of nice days. They were either work days or I had prior obligations. I have not had time. I have not flown my drone in Philly.
It's March, dude.
I know. It's been months. And the weather, and today, rainy. Like 5 minutes of sunshine. It's either been rainy or snowy. We've been getting weird flash blizzards. Awful.
Nice.
But other than that, I'm great.
Nice. So we've built kind of our own framework for front end framework anyway, to kind of meet the needs that we have, or at least that I have at work. And there's always a debate. In fact, I just had to fill out like some sort of JavaScript survey for, I don't remember if it was O'Reilly or if it was Stack Exchange or whatever. They all send out surveys for what kind of frameworks are you looking at and what kind of things are you doing. And obviously there's the big joke of there being a new JavaScript framework every week, and you know it's difficult to catch up on, and of course you got all of the front end tooling to go along with it, and there's the big battle between things like React and Angular and Vue.js and you know Aurelia and some other things that they're kind of throwing in there for good measure. And I know you've been doing a lot of Angular work lately, and I know you really like Angular, so I figured we could do a podcast episode about Angular and kind of what's new or what we like and what we don't like. I mean, you know way more than I do. I actually only have experience with Angular.js, which was the original version, but I can chime in with a couple of key points that I know about. And so you've been working with it for how long now, pretty steadily?
I'd say about a year, maybe a little more than a year, but I started developing my own projects in it. In fact, my wife's website is now fully Angularized, and I've been doing that for maybe 9 months, but I started doing little pickup projects because the company where I was working last year, I wanted to bring them over to Angular. Then I left there and I went with another place, and they're an Angular shop.
Oh,
I mean,
nice.
They do other stuff, but so I've been working consistently and almost exclusively with Angular, to the point where I haven't really touched Visual Studio Standard in about that same amount of time, because I'm able to do everything from Visual Studio Code.
I love code. I love Visual Studio Code.
I do too. I really like how light it is. And I, of course, you know, I'll always love Visual Studio. And yes, to the audience, I am that kind of guy where I don't just look at something sort of agnostic and say, well, you know, it's just, you know, I can, you know, just use this because it's more efficient. I tend to fall in love with the things that I use and that I like. I tend to be a little bit binary, and I know that's not necessarily always healthy, but whatever. I've always loved Visual Studio, and Visual Studio Code is really great for Angular, especially because not only am I doing stuff, you know, just with the framework, but I'm doing a lot of things now in the command line more. You know, I've kind of used GUIs with Git. But now that there are like, you know, it's really best to use the command line Angular CLI with Angular. So I'm in the CLI more. So then I'm kind of like, well, you know, I'll get comfortable with Git again, you know, just like the CLI commands as opposed to using an interface. So it's kind of put me into a place that brings me up to speed with what a lot of developers are currently really involved in. So it's been kind of good. So not, you know, using Angular has also brought me into a lot of other cool things.
And how have you, I mean, obviously you've liked it. Have you guys fallen into the battle, or at least the online battle, with different frameworks? And what's your opinion on that?
I think that there's certainly, look, my opinion is go with what you like. I just said I fall in love with things. I never believed when I, you know, was building stuff in .NET, you know, and doing .NET MVC, that everything needed to be .NET MVC. It's just that everything I did was .NET MVC because, you know, I'm learning it and I wanted to get better and better at it. So each successive project, I learn something new and I get better. So that's what I used, and I really like it, and I still do, right? So it's kind of a zero-sum game. If you like a particular library or framework and that works for you, then use it. I mean, the support's out there. And there's no reason not. You can not only use it to build your applications, but you can contribute to it in the open source. I do prefer Angular, and here's why. So as opposed to something like React, which is really popular, And I would also say, don't really pay attention to developer polls that say, oh, you know, they're showing a little graph or React is getting more popular and Angular is going down. Don't let that determine the tools that you want to use. Understand your needs as a developer. What do you want to develop with? What's the breadth of what's the scope of the apps you want to build? Do you want to build some simple front-end applications? Right? Maybe you just need library stuff that's light. Or you want to do full stack development, maybe .NET or maybe a mean stack, you know? So I kind of follow the Angular blog. So Angular's been growing. And the reason I like Angular is because, like I said, I come from a .NET background and I'm used to the whole Microsoft stack. So I have not just a way to, you know, bind data to my views, but I also have a whole framework in place to help me, you know, like I said, with the Angular CLI, where I can scaffold a lot of the stuff out. And it's kind of all everything I might want to need to build a full-fledged application is already in place. I don't have to worry about going and say with React, which is just kind of a presentation layer, but then you need your data layer. You know, you need a lot of other things. I don't want to sound like I know React thoroughly. I do not, but I know what it is. You know, and I know what its limitations are. As any library, you can pick and choose what you want, which makes it lighter. But if you go with something like Angular, again, you've got the full package in place to deal with most of the things you would want. Anything, like I said, you've got your presentation layer, you've got your data layer, you've got HTTP services built in. You know, so all of the things you're going to want, you don't have to worry about going to NPM and calling down all these packages. If you like that, that's great. But if you want something kind of out of the box that'll kind of get you started with what you want, and it'll kind of give you a full-bodied dynamic application, single page, you know, because Angular is a single page application framework, then it's a great place to look. And for me, you know, there's always the saying that, you know, you use the tool that works best for the situation. Well, software development isn't necessarily like carpentry, right? You know, you would never use a wrench really to hammer a nail into a wall. Unless, of course, you can't find the hammer. I've done it myself. But you know what I mean? But the point is, you know, you've got your toolkit there. But software development is kind of a different beast, right? And the analog falls apart to a certain degree. And for me, like I said, with .NET and now with Angular, I am using Angular to build everything because it's not heavy. I mean, they've certainly improved it. In terms of like load times, the they're shrinking the libraries. Now they have a thing ahead of time compiling.
Right.
So you can have all of your libraries pre-compiled. When you publish it, it does it automatically, but you can also do it now while you're debugging. But ahead of time compiling is different, where as opposed, you know, if you don't have it, the browser has to compile it at runtime, you know, when the browser renders it. So it makes it smaller, makes it faster. And so I'm using Angular for everything right now. Personal apps, obviously I'm using it at work because it's kind of giving me everything that I need. So, and most of the apps I build aren't necessarily static. Almost everything I build is data driven. So, you know, I'm going to want to take advantage of that in Angular. So I just thoroughly enjoy it. And I enjoy it. It's not the, actually, it is the first framework I think I landed on with JavaScript. I didn't spend a lot of time, like you had mentioned a bunch, and there's like Ember.
Right.
There was a bunch, and I played a little bit with AngularJS when it first came out, and that was by accident, really. I was trying to build a single page. I knew what single page web apps were, and I wanted to build one for my wedding website, which I did. I used AngularJS, and it was a parallax site. So, I mainly wanted to build, you know, a parallax. And for those who don't know or can't quite place the nomenclature, it's when you're scrolling down, up and down on your website, and there are images that move over top of other images and they don't move in sync with each other. It's like this sort of 3D sort of background effect. I can't describe it as well as just, you know, call it what it is.
Oh, if you've ever looked at a website from 5 years ago, you know, it was one of the most trendy things.
It was. And I did get married about 5 years ago, four. So it was sort of in vogue and it was just an Angular site. And I was like, oh man, I don't, you know, because that was around the time where I was still mostly a .NET guy. And I was starting to transition to JavaScript, but I wasn't deep. I was just getting, like, I knew JavaScript, but then learning a framework that was like, what is a front end framework? But I was learning it and it was cool. And I liked that, you know, the whole idea of a component architecture, or at least just, you know, a componentized web, you know, where you have just like the chunks that you want to use and then you draw them in as you need them, which I would say Angular is very good at. One of the things I learned recently, and I feel like this is a strength of Angular, is lazy loading. I haven't really done a lot of lazy loading in applications to begin with, but obviously the idea of lazy loading, especially with a front-end framework, is you can, and this was one of my problems early on as I started getting deeper into JavaScript stuff, was that with all of these JavaScript libraries, you know, you're downloading all this stuff. And there was a debate at the time, when do you load it? Do you load it at the front or do you load it when it's needed? Loading it when it's needed, by the way, is what is called lazy loading. And I never really could make heads or tails of the general consensus on the web, but it seemed to me a lot of front-end developers at the time were saying that the benefit was loading everything up front, front-loading it, and then this way the rest of the app would be faster. I think that now it seems to me the consensus is definitely the inverse, that you don't want to force the client to download everything. It may never use half that
right,
stuff.
You only want to give them what they need.
What's that?
You only want to give them what they need, what they actually
exactly.
need to run it.
Because it's you're making a lot of assumptions about why the user's on your site and where they're going to go.
Right.
And you just don't want them waiting for things to load. And it's just that simple.
Let me interrupt you briefly.
Sure.
Because
I could keep going.
how does lazy loading, is that diametrically opposed to server-side rendering? Does it work in unison? I'm kind of confused on the compatibility of the two, because in one sense you are kind of going back and recalling maybe some components or re-pulling down data, but with server-side rendering you're basically trying to pre-render a lot of the components and the templating and everything into JavaScript so that you can just grab that, as opposed to the browser having to kind of put that together.
The browser puts it all together. The only time that lazy loading would do any server-side functionality is if there's data involved and you haven't like pre-cached any of it.
Okay, so you kind of would want to do either one or the other, depending on the situation that you're in.
Yeah, I mean, you could do both. They sort of function independently from one another.
Right, okay.
They're kind of agnostic, and depending on how you do it, I always, at this point now, everything in terms of data and service calls is always APIs, like
right.
you know, microservices. And so it's basically the only thing that's really happening server side is your data, you know, what, how much data you're calling, how much, you know, if it's getting shaped, you know, what kind of requests are you making to the database?
Right.
Because you're sending all of the rendering stuff right to the application in the beginning. I mean, it's all JavaScript, and that's Angular, you know, that developers might use, say, something like React and do that completely differently. That's totally up to them, because React isn't a framework, so it doesn't sort of force you to do things a specific way.
Yeah, because I mean, I understand the value in both of them, because with the server side rendering, I mean, your overhead is going to be, and Angular might, I don't know, I haven't looked at the guts of Angular, so I don't know exactly how this is done, but I do some templating mashup, and I know how kind of, you know, handlebars works, which was, I think, popularized by Ember.js. And when you're doing that, I mean, you have your initial page load, you have your JavaScript load, then you have your JavaScript actually has to make the API call, but then you pass that data into a template. And if that template is not on your page, but is instead in an external kind of HTML file, you then have to make another call to get that HTML file. And you can cache all of these things, but ultimately you're going to have to mash them together. And that might require some looping, which, you know, gives you kind of a resource hit. And so what a lot of, I think, front-end frameworks, I think React might do this too, I'm not 100% sure, I know Angular does, is kind of mash that together on the server side, so that when you make that call, kind of download that information, you're downloading just the already mashed JavaScript, and you don't have to worry about kind of those multiple calls, which I think is interesting. It kind of helps out with the speed of the application, especially in a single page application. But take a look. So I did Angular.js back when it was Angular, before it became Angular 1 versus Angular 2. And then they skipped 3 because they accidentally named the rallying component 3, so then it went to Angular 4.
Right, they wanted to bring all the versioning up to you know, the same level.
So you have AngularJS, and I think you have Angular 4, and I think maybe 5 is not that far around the corner.
No, it's 5's here.
Oh, is it? It's released?
The release cycle is going to be 2 major versions a year.
Okay.
Yeah. So every 6 months you get a major update, and then it's minors, you know, throughout those, between those 6 months.
So when I originally did AngularJS, the syntax was a little funky. It was mostly specialized attribute tags inside of the HTML. And then obviously they tried to do a MVVM type model, view model, and in order to kind of pull all the data in. And you had like your ng repeat and your ng class and your ng if, and everything was of course prefixed with ng dash. I noticed that the syntax is different with Angular 4. I'm seeing things like, you know, star ng 4 or star ng if without the dash. So they made a concerted effort to kind of reshape some of the syntax. And I'm not 100% sure why they did that, but it seems like they did it for templating purposes.
That's exactly why.
Is that why they did it?
Okay. Yeah.
Is there a story behind that, or is that just say we did it for templating reasons and that was the end of it?
No story that I'm aware of. I think probably when they're rewriting everything, and for those who don't know, the reason there's a major revision between what's original Angular, AngularJS, and everything 2 and above, now just really called Angular, is that they rewrote everything from Angular 2 up in TypeScript. And I think that as they were going along, I think they were just trying to apply some, I don't know, whatever made more sense to them over the original Angular in terms of, you know, the specialized attributes and piping, stuff like that. And I just think they changed it because maybe perhaps it made more sense to them.
Interesting. Yeah, because some of these things I didn't even know were valid. Well, I mean, obviously there might not be valid HTML, but clearly you're allowed to put them in a web page and let the browser render them, such as, you know, the attributes that have square brackets around them. So that's,
yeah, that's for two-way data binding.
Right, right.
So that's specifically what that is.
So there's some interesting syntax choices in creating some of the components. So are you comfortable with that? Or do you find that like something like maybe Knockout handles some of those bindings a little bit better?
No, but I do actually have a lot of experience with Knockout. It was right before I went into Angular, I was using a lot of Knockout to do my data binding. So I would use Entity Framework to get my data object, and I'd bring it in, I'd load it in when the application loads, and then I would use Knockout to bind everything where it needed to be, you know. And of course you want to get the observables, and observables are just a special kind of function that basically gives a real-time update. So if something is an observable, like your data type, it's not a data type, but an observable is a kind of, I don't know how you would describe an observable, but basically, so what's going to happen is, because observables can be of, you know, a type string or, you know, an int, but you can subscribe to an observable. What's going to happen is it's going to emit anytime that value has changed, right? So you're subscribing to some variable, and anytime it changes its value, you know, it gets emitted. And so what you do is you get real time feedback. And so Knockout does that pretty good. Obviously, Angular has that built into it, and I have to say, I'm rebuilding an application now where all of my data binds were in Knockout, and Angular is way simpler. I don't know that I need to get like too terribly technical. I don't want to try to describe code, you know, over the air. But the thing is, it took significantly less because I had to, Knockout didn't do two-way binding too well. It doesn't do it as well as Angular. Or Knockout doesn't do two-way binding as well as Angular. I had to basically have two different observables. One would be the value that was going to be sitting in a place, and I was just passing a lot of data back and forth to kind of get the real-time updating in the scenario that I was building it. And with Angular, it's way more direct of the way that they do the attribute binding.
Was this the application? I think it was for one of your one of your wife's websites, right?
And it is. In fact, it's on my. I've never actually told our audience where my GitHub is, but I have a GitHub where I normally put any sort of like, you know, chunks of applications that I've worked on or small applications that I've learned to use technology to build, and I'll put them on my GitHub. And this one is on my GitHub. It's actually just GitHub/Narathustra, I think, but it's itinerary. So my wife, you know, does this festival, and people could go through and on a left column, a large, you know, took up like, you know, 3/4 on the left and then 1/4 on the right. And then as they were making their selections, it was for acrobatics, and they were making certain selections on the left, picking out the classes and the positions that they wanted, you know, because in acrobatics, you're either like what's called a base, you know, you're holding the person up, or you're a flyer, which means you're the person getting lifted up in the air. And so what I wanted was anytime somebody selected, you know, so on a change, I wanted it to update in that 1/4 column on the right. I wanted it to real time update that column, and that column ultimately would get printed out, and that was your itinerary. You've picked the class that you wanted and the position that you wanted in that class, and there's like a whole, there's a whole grid of them. So I wanted each section in that grid to, you know, pass that value over in real time to the right column. And I did that in Knockout, and it worked fine, but the code, and it certainly I could have written the code better. When I went back and did it in Angular, not only did it make the two-way binding easier for me, but also I think I made better use of, you know, iterating, you know, looping through the collections and stuff like that. So I made the code cleaner, not just by better use of like just better knowledge, you know, of loops, but also the binding, cut out a lot of the need to create extra variables to hold the different data as it gets passed around.
So how many times were you able to be the flyer?
I've flown a couple times. My wife has actually flown me because acro yoga is less about strength, although it certainly helps in certain situations, but more about what she likes to call bone stacking.
Okay.
Which basically means you're locking your arms or your legs, and you're allowing the sort of like the, you know, once you've locked it in place, you're basically allowing your body to be like this sort of a pillar with using the center of gravity, which is less about strength and again, just more about balance. And my wife would pick up guys that were like 300 pounds, 280 pounds was one guy, I think he was.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Bill's not a small guy. What are you, like 6'4", 6'3"?
I'm 6'4", 220 right now.
Yeah.
Trying to get back down.
So lifting him up in the air, I'm sure is an adventure. So your team, at least at work, you said you're heavy into Angular. What are you using for your back end? Are you guys using, you said a mean stack, so are you using Express for your back end? Are you using just like Restify, which is the kind of trimmed down REST web service only version, or have you guys gone like serverless?
No, they're using a traditional back end. So I'm trying to remember the name of the one. It's they're REST calls. And there's a lot of, because they use all microservices. So the whole idea is right. Their backend is basically, they've got their backend, but they expose all of the data, you know, through to the developer with REST calls. And I forget the one that they're using because we haven't used it yet. But otherwise, it's just traditional REST API calls with REST.
When you do it for your own personal stuff, what are you using? You just using .NET web API?
Depends. So right now I'm split 50-50. I usually will still go into, I'll create a .NET application that's an API application. And then I will, you know, I'll hook that up using Entity Framework with a regular MS SQL database. And then I'll expose the data with, you know, APIs. But I've started using Firebase.
Okay.
Which is the Google just bought them or has owned them for a while. But so I'm using Firebase because what that does is, you know, you're just making it's an HTTP request, and it Firebase will just pass back JSON over the URL, and you can tokenize it. So this way, obviously it's secure,
but, right.
So I'm kind of 50-50 right now, but I'm liking the simplicity. I mean, it's obviously, and I can go into the Firebase console and very easily add, you know, a data set. And the other thing that I really like, I love this about using Firebase was, so when I was using Entity Framework, if you have to add a field to your data structure, you know, you have a class, because I would always use code first. I always built my data using code, Yeah, code first. Yeah. So I would basically write out all the fields and then I would plug that into the entity framework and have it scaffold out. And then it would just sort of build my data model that way. And then if I wanted to add a field or make some sort of modification, I had to, it was kind of a pain in the butt. And to be honest, I actually forget. Have you ever had to do that?
What, through entity framework?
Yeah.
So
there was a process. If you wanted to update your data, your data class, there's a process you had to do. And I'm drawing a blank on it right now.
Yeah. See, what we traditionally use is SQL raw queries, which when you pass in a generic will auto map back to whatever your entity object binding is for your ORM. And then we just take that and then you can run either the link queries off of that. But we never, because that gets passed straight through the web API and then back on the front end, it just gets, they're all static. So they're web services that basically call static model classes that do the updating that way. So we're not kind of using the traditional entity sense.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, it was a bit of a process to update your entity data model. And so, you know, whatever, like I learned how to do it and I would just do it. But again, it was one of those things where I didn't have to do it often and I would try to do my best when I was designing my data model to not have to do that because it was such a pain. And you would have to go in like, you could run the commands through, you had to actually run the commands through PowerShell in Visual Studio. So with Firebase, recently I had to do that. And I don't even know if I wasn't paying attention, but I had gone in and the one class, that basically the data model, I had to add some more stuff and I just added it. And then, you know, I data bound the fields and then submitted it as normal, you know, through the HTTP service call, and Firebase is automatically just added it. Like, cause again, it's just, you're basically writing simply to JSON. So it gets all the data and it says, oh, okay, there's some extra fields here. I'll just add them, you know, cause JSON, what you got your key value pairs basically. Right. So it just added it. I didn't have to do anything. I was like, this is awesome. I love it.
So, going back to Angular, I know you had like kind of a list of a couple of things that you liked that were new in the framework that you wanted to go over. Did we cover them all or was there a couple other things you wanted to point out real quick?
Well, I was just going to say that the difference, one of the big things that made me shift over to Angular, because I was, like I said, I had done the AngularJS and I had already started thinking I wanted to do more front end development. You know, I didn't necessarily want to do full stack. Because basically, like I'd outlined with the entity data model stuff, it's just a lot of extra work. Like it was more time I had to spend figuring out just how to get everything to work up, you know, all the way up and down, as opposed to just writing code, which is actually my favorite part of development. Either writing code or figuring out, you know, with the code I need to write to solve the problem. When Microsoft released Angular templates in Visual Studio, it was awesome. So I went in, I created my first app. And as I was going doing online online tutorials, kind of how does this work? What are my steps? Microsoft naturally completely made their own version. You know, the hierarchy, the structure of the application was different. And I was able to figure it out. It wasn't radically different, but you know, it was different enough. It's like, okay, we're not working inside of any best practices here.
So you different know. From the Angular tutorials or from what the Angular CLI scaffolds out.
Exactly. And I like scaffolding. You know, I know some programmers who actually like to handwrite all the stuff out themselves. I kind of like to just get the menial stuff done, get it generated, have this stuff automated so I can kind of get to the work. And then I saw that the Angular CLI would allow me to do the scaffolding. And I was like, well, this is great, right? And that was actually one of the first steps of me moving away from Visual Studio and into Visual Studio Code because, you know, obviously it's got the terminal integration. And I was like, oh, I know how to type, you know, and the commands are super simple, you know, and then you just generate your components, generate your modules, and it would do it just like Visual Studio would. Just put it in the directory it needs to be in. It would, you know, pre-fill all the stuff you needed. So because I'm learning, right, I don't have to like pour through documentation meticulously to learn all of the imports I need, what the decorators are that I need for this to work. It's just there. And then I can just build stuff and it'll work as I go. So that's really great. And another thing, and you were kind of talking about you know, we're talking about data. Another thing, and this was big React. React has, I don't want to confuse the terminology, but I think it's Redux, right? Which is the state of data, right? Statefulness is kind of important, maybe not necessarily in the old ASP.NET ways, but you know, you want to be able to persist the state of the data as you are switching and moving between components in Angular, or moving between any kind of state in your application. And so Angular has sort of co-opted their own version of Redux. I think it's NgRx. And that's their implementation of Redux. So you actually have a built-in, again, because Angular is a framework, they've made these tools possible. So now that you have a way to bring in statefulness into your application for a single page application and work within that, and you know, you kind of basically have what they call the data store. And that's where you're storing stuff. I figure my dogs are going to bark at some point.
Better than my so cat. That's something,
and I'm learning more about the NgRx stuff now.
So you mentioned the Angular CLR, and I was kind of curious because I know that the CLI, or, yeah, CLR, Angular CLR.
Yeah, common language runtime, yeah.
But with the Angular CLI, I know that it uses kind of Webpack in the background to bundle up things, and I was kind of curious as to whether or not the Angular CLI actually used Yeoman to do its scaffolding or its generation. It doesn't seem like that, unless I'm reading it wrong. They seem to be two separate things. So I wonder what the choice was there to go ahead and build on top of Webpack for bundling, but not actually use Yeoman for standard scaffolding.
Yeah, I don't. That would obviously be in some sort of internal decision. I've never read why that choice is. However, I know that you can customize the CLI. They have you can generate your own template. So right now, out of the box, the CLI, when you generate, say, a component, which is your fundamental component of an Angular app, you know, it is the building block. In there, you will get a Karma. Because it's, you know, they have the test driven stuff. So you get a Karma test file in there along with your TS file, which is your code behind, your HTML and your CSS. Now you can modify, because we do at work, and don't ask me how, I'm still figuring that one out. It's a little bit of a black box to me, but you can modify your CLI to output a SAS CSS file. And you could probably add other stuff. I know that they recently announced in one of their blog posts templating within the CLI so that you can have more extensibility in how you use it. So you could probably add things like Yeoman, any sort of like any NPM package managers, stuff like that. You know, I think so that you can kind of customize it more to the way you like to develop.
So you're happy with Angular at this point, right? You have no reason to switch to Facebook. See, to circle back to our conversation at the beginning when you were kind of lamenting on the different choices and choose one that works best for you. I kind of look at it as choose one that you know is going to have support. I think support is the biggest factor. And of course, with Google being behind Angular and then Facebook is behind React, I think both of them are going to have long-term support. They're building their own stuff in it. So I think Angular is a safe bet. If you're going to make choices, you don't have to worry about that disappearing. It's not a framework that three guys in a garage are actually building out. So earlier on in our development, we actually used Bower for package management on the front end. We didn't decide to use NPM. In fact, at that time, NPM didn't house like CSS frameworks or anything like that. It actually was primarily built for Node, not for browser front-end things. And then they started to incorporate browser front-end pieces. And Bower, which was really handled by maybe one guy and a handful of community, it's basically deprecated now.
Deprecated.
Right. So I don't even know if it works. I haven't. But we invested in building our projects out with that, and then ended up having to change course, and I had to update many of our projects to actually point to whatever to point towards a bundle out of the node modules because of, you know, those choices. So I've always been kind of careful, even with Webpack, which is a small group of people, although they do have funding. I've been carefuler nowadays in looking at new technology and saying, okay, what is the support model behind this? And if this goes, you know, this person quits, or if this goes under, is this something that's still maintainable, or should I be looking elsewhere? Because for enterprise applications, you know, I can't be going and swapping out package management every, you know, 3 to 4 months simply because something goes under. But to your point, you know, choosing something like Angular is a simple choice of who's behind it, what's the support model. Gee, it looks like this thing is going to last for a while. So is this the right fit for me? And does it have the community kind of built up around it so that I can get questions answered, you know, when I have them? So I think that's extremely important.
Yeah, it is. And I would totally agree with the support. One of the things that turned me on to Angular was I had already spent, we were talking about that Knockout application. I had built Knockout. That was, you know, obviously I had the Knockout library in there to do the data binding, but that was all written in TypeScript. And the reason I kind of started looking at Angular was, you know, I fell in love with TypeScript and I thought, oh, this thing is now completely undergirded by TypeScript. So they're picking a technology that's got strong support. It's Microsoft and it's a Google Microsoft collaboration. So I thought, yeah, I don't have to worry so much about this thing becoming deprecated because like you, I was, using Bower. In fact, the reason I was using it was because Microsoft was putting it into their projects.
Yep. Initially the .NET core stuff recommended Bower.
Yeah. And so I was using it and learning it. And then I remember you go to the blog. I think they had a blog. I went somewhere on the web and they're like, now this is deprecated. And, you know, I was like, oh, great. You know, and I remember hearing about Webpack. And I think maybe Microsoft is now putting Webpack in there. Although it wouldn't surprise me if I started a new project and there's Bower still. But I did that. I mean, I think that's extremely important because other than the fact that you might like a technology for its versatility or it's sort of a Swiss Army knife of things, if it's going to go away in 6 months, then none of that matters. And I think that is really a chief among the concerns that any developer should have. I was going to point out that Angular, when I was kind of saying like, don't look at comparison charts saying, oh, you know, this is more popular than this. It's not a popularity game. Again, support for the technology is great. And if the technology is something that you can invest in, and just in the end of last year, Angular saw a lot of growth. So it went from, in the beginning of October, 875,000 known uses of it. I don't really know. This is actually from the Angular developer conference. It went from under 1 million in October to the beginning of December of last year, over 1 million. So obviously there's a lot of growth. And like I said, the company I'm working at, you know, it's a mortgage. It's like a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway. It's not a small little startup shop. I mean, they need to know that the technology that they invest in is going to be around, it's going to be supported, and they chose it because again, it's got a lot of, it's very robust. And so there's a lot of growth there. So that's another reason that I like it. Although as a developer, I like it again, because it's got a lot of really cool stuff in there that allows me to kind of, you know, get a package or, get a project up and running, and I can start coding some complex stuff right out of the box. It takes me, you know, not that long to get a really nice data-driven single-page web app in no time.
Well, that's all I think we have for you guys today. So me and Bill and Bill's dog will talk to you next time, unless he cuts that out of this episode, and then you'll have no clue what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm going to leave it in.
But until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Take care, everybody.
That's it for this episode of Code Punk. You can subscribe to this podcast on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher, or listen to it on the web at codepunk.io. You can find Bill on Twitter at Norethustra and Michael on Twitter at Zool.